Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. Ose, welcome to the Automates podcast. Thank you very much for taking time out of your morning to chat with me. It's really appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's all right. It's great. I was trying to cast my mind back to when I first met you. I know you were working at White & Case, but I can't remember the exact year, but it was something like 2013, 2012, 2013, I think, when I was back at HiQ. So I've known you for a very long time, but for the people that might not know who you are, which probably there aren't many in the legal tech, KM and innovation world, why don't you just let us know who you are, where you are, what you're doing, and what have you enjoyed about 2025 so far?
So I'm Oswin Amram, and I'm now advising law firms about the use of knowledge, innovation, AI, legal tech. I started my career as a litigator. I moved to New York in 98 to do IPOs. I worked at Fulbright Jaworski for a year, and then I switched to Morrison Foerster. At some point, IPO market died in the 2000, the dot-com era, and they put me on e-discovery. We didn't know what to call it e-discovery. We just called it discovery. Some nice system, and they were very impressed. In 2002, they asked me to lead knowledge and innovation at Morrison Foerster. And it's then that I worked with Recomind to build a decisive search. And from there, I moved to White & Case in 2008.
Okay.
To build the knowledge and department over there. And then in 2019, I moved to Simpson Thatcher to build the knowledge and innovation function. And I just left in the beginning of this year to be an advisor, mainly for law firms, about knowledge, innovation, and AI mainly.
So I didn't realize that you sort of moved into knowledge management. Was it even called knowledge management in 2002 when you looked at it? Okay.
Yeah, it was. It was, it was then. So they told me, you're it. Go tell us what we need to do. And I had some thoughts about what we need to do, but there were some people, at the time, there were about a couple of dozens firm that already had established knowledge management in them. Yeah. And people would come to New York every the beginning of the year for legal tech, we used to call it. That's legal week. So I invited them all to my office and say, tell me what you do. And I think it was mainly because of the nature of the individuals who led that. We miss most Michael Mills, who passed away a couple of years ago, but others who were smart and kind and sharing and helping each other figure out what mistakes not to do. So we started creating, and we said, what do you do? What are you guys like? They asked me, what should we do? What should we do? And that's, and then people threw ideas, and then we put it together, and then we said, okay, now let's vote. From all those ideas, we group them by three categories, like technology, enablers, and culture, and processes and culture. And let's vote. Let's say it's hypothetical, large firm came out of nowhere. What should they be focusing on? And then we got this kind of KM menu of the things you should focus on. And it was very helpful for all of us. And that was the beginning of skills today, right? I mean, okay. They get together, sharing opinion and experience, voting about things to help each other. And that's how it started. So, and I've been hosting it every year since, and it became very helpful. When the pandemic hit, a couple of years before the pandemic hit, we decided it's just us in echo chambers, and it was already a decade and a half into the process. We probably should open the doors to learn what other people are doing. We didn't want to lose the intimacy. So we decided to do, the morning was just us in a small group that we all know each other and trust each other and can share scars. And then in the afternoon, we opened it to showcase some interesting things that are new and interesting. And then when the pandemic hit, we separated two different days, and we did the we call it the summit. Skills is strategic knowledge and innovation, legal leader summit. I thought to call it Kills, and then Peter Krakauer said, add strategic in the beginning, and it becomes Skills. So the summit is people get together in the room and share learnings together. And then there is the showcase, which is its own day where people showcase like experiences of things that worked and didn't work and share knowledge that way. That's online. And then we do every year before people show up, we do surveys to help know what's market. And that was really part of the DNA of Skills from the very beginning. So the surveys, and then we just announced, and next week we're starting the Skills Summer Seminars. What happened was just before the summit this year, we did a couple of workshops about concepts that are of interest to the community, and people really liked it, and they asked, let's do more of those. So the idea is to have an opportunity for the vendors who support the industry to share learnings with us. This is not by any means, and let me be very clear, not a product demo or sales pitch, but an opportunity really to share learnings and to elevate the conversation in a way that makes sense. And that's the seminars we're just starting next week from now until ILTA.
Awesome. You mentioned Michael Mills being involved. I was lucky enough to meet Michael a number of times. Gracious, wonderful human, super intelligent. I think, you know, the one thing that I've realized during my time of roughly sort of meeting you, not just you, but, you know, the industry that we operate in and this knowledge community that we've got, it's sort of the reason why I love going to ILTA and Legal Tech. It's like everyone is willing to help and listen and share. And this didn't quite work or this did work. But I think that's a reflection of our sort of the industry that we operate in. I think it's a credit, and I really like the way that you guys you've changed the dynamic, and obviously you've just mentioned you've introduced the new summit piece, but actually the dynamic of what Skills was before and what it is now is not really changed. It's it is about that openness and sharing and what's market, and I think that's really credit to you guys.
As I said, partly it was just the founding generation was just kind and sharing people. Partly, I think it felt it's us against them. It was the people who care about sharing knowledge versus the firm that's hard versus one firm against the other. And I think the point was, you know, this is not how we compete as firms against each other. Right? And this is one of those moments of high tides raise all boats together. If we all figure out doing it better, it doesn't mean that any of us is going to lose. It's better for the clients, it's better for the law firms, better for the industry as a whole. And that was proven to be right. And people do share and we learn and we do better together.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So we're going to talk about sort of the main report, and we're going to talk about the use of AI report that you've just in the last 6-8 weeks you've launched. And I think the thing that stands out for me around the 2025 report, and I will share links to it all if the listeners want to download it, if they haven't already. I'm sure they would have done, because, you know, I used to remember it was always around that Legal Week kind of timeline, and I would wait for it to come out, because it was when I was at HiQ, it would help inform how we were talking about things. And, you know, are we off the mark? Are we trying to educate people? Are we moving people too fast? What kind of use cases are people interested in? It was really valuable as a vendor, not just as a KM professional. But the part for me, and the bit that sort of it resonates in terms of the way that you present the report and what you're working on, in what you were working on versus what you said you were going to work on and what you plan to work on next. If we remove AI from it, what are the things that you, because obviously everyone's going to be doing AI, because AI is all important, all consuming, and just all wonderful. How do you see that report and that dynamic, having been on the buy side and now consulting law firm, so it's your peers effectively, I've noticed it, that for the last probably 18 months, there's almost like a bit of paralysis around other types of projects, other types of initiatives. But as people have realized that good data, good process is going to be vital to the success of any AI project, are you surprised to not, so are you surprised to see those still at the top, or are you looking at the other areas as more interesting?
No, I think the AI gave a big boost to the back to basics, right? Yep. I mean, all those eat your vegetables projects, right? Get your information governance properly, do your knowledge bank, do your closing set. So the classic AM becomes really instrumental for law firms to be able to compete in the AI era. And I think there is a great revival, right? I mean, we've seen in the last couple of years, there are many intranet projects because we need to get organized. We do closing set is a big project, doing it better, doing it holistically, doing it so you can extract the knowledge from your closing set in a way that goes to your foundation database or Deal Cloud database or any place where you manage your matters. I think the realization and the maturity of law firms realize what we sell is matters, not documents. So yeah. Let's do KM on the matter level. This is all not surprising, but it is very consistent across the industry.
Yeah. And you call it back to basics. And a good mutual friend of ours, Alex Smith, always talks about the hard yards. And sort of the back to basics, the eat your vegetables kind of projects are always the hardest kind of projects. They're always the hardest. And they're easiest to skip over and look at other things. But I think anything that's bringing a focus on those kind of things is going to be a good thing. You know, AI was always going to be good, but actually it could be so much better if you've got these foundational pillars right and ready.
Yes, totally agree. It's very hard to be successful with installing software if you don't have the data. And when we talk about data, we don't talk about, you know, IT data. We talk about meta dashboards, the things that matter the most, your pricing strategy, your legal strategy, right? I mean, this is all the data that we're talking about, which is essential to be able to generate any good products.
Yeah. And ultimately, good outcomes for the clients, you know, it's as it sort of comes back to. I mean, you can have all of these things, but if you're having to write off a ton of stuff or not, ultimately it's you get paid for delivering that outcome, doing it in the best way possible. Okay, so if moving away from the main report, I can't remember, was it sort of 8 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, the sort of the use of AI report that you produced or skills produced?
So what we've done, you know, this year, because we did a general report that we do every year, and then we realized we really don't know what people use. And we would love to know which are the products that are being used for each one of the use cases. So we worked with our friends at Legal Tech Hub to come up with the legal use cases. What are the main categories of legal AI? And we provided people with the list. And for each one we started with 30-something. Then we dropped a few because there wasn't enough interest in them. In the report itself, we include 22 use cases and then many other questions about how you organize and do you have a committee and strategy and policy and all those other things. And then for each use case, we ask you, give us for each vendor that plays in that field, is it live, in pilot, you're seriously considering or not on your radar. Yeah. So by voting that, we got the list of the key players for each use case. There were some surprises, not many, I think, but it was very helpful to know who are the key players. I think one of the key indicators, actually not live and pilot, but really interested to show you what is the potential of each one of those categories. Because some vendors have been there for a while, but they haven't been innovating. So what does it mean for the future of the product? And when you see a lot of newcomers, there's a lot of interest in those newcomers. Is it really a threat to the status quo, or are new exciting things coming to take over? And It is a very exciting time to be doing KM and innovation in law firms, because there's a lot of change and it's very exciting, and it's much more important for the future of the success of the law firm.
Yeah, completely. It feels like there's we've talked before, but you know, the industry has talked for years about sort of changing business models, the impact of sort of technology on the outcomes of a law firm and its clients, and what that looks like. I think we're on the, and we've seen cycles. You know, we've seen cycles of sort of old AI like Kira and the like, and other sort of projects and phases that we've seen that have been highlighted in your reports over the years. You know, this feels like the first thing that has captured an entire, it isn't just isolated to a silo or a vertical or a practice. It feels like it's the first thing that's infiltrated everything as a technology, I guess, in a firm. So in theory, therefore, it does have the greatest sort of potential of positive impact or negative, positive, not negative, positive impact. And maybe this is a personal question or it's referenced in the report, I can't remember. Do you do analysis around, and you started to talk about it, versus the old incumbents introducing AI into their technology stacks and the new players, the Harveys, the Layers, or Legora, sorry, the Hebbiers, these guys that are coming into the market with brand new products, brand new platforms, brand new ideas? How do you feel about the split between those dynamics? Obviously, there's disruptors and there's the industry established, but how do you think that might play out?
So given that the whole technology is very new, it was expected that new players will show up. Right? Mm. And yes, the older vendors are also clearly heavily involved and investing a lot in that. They have sometimes more resources to play in there, but they also have legacy systems to deal with. You know, the joke about how God was able to create Earth in 6 days, there was no legacy system to deal with. When you have so many products and so many workflows already established, it's harder to move as fast sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that makes it easy for the newcomers to show new concepts early on, which makes it exciting. But you know, the moat is very low around almost everyone, because the key enabler are the LLMs that anyone can use. And if you understand the workflows and understand the value early enough, and if you're connected to your customers, everyone is doing a lot. And I think, you know, in the report, you might think that some of the old players are at risk, but I think the most recent push by Litera, for example, around AI and bringing the Litera One product is very exciting news, because it makes it, the pressure from the newcomers makes the established organizations do better. Yeah. And that's okay. That you could see that also coming up there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think the thing for me is the modality of of how you use the technology. At the moment, sort of the natural language, the chat interface, it has its place and is good. But actually, equally, and obviously, we're a process platform. So, you know, where we can embed the technology into a process silently and layer in the tools and capability, I think there's a lot of talk about workflows, but actually these new incumbents are building tools and technologies and understanding what those workflows are. How do you see the pressure on everyone wanting to get their hands on it and having that kind of modality versus a slightly alternate view, which is actually maybe somebody doesn't even need to know what model it is and what the system's doing. The lawyer just cares about getting the summary or the extracted terms in the right format that helps them do the next job quicker and more effectively.
So I think we're in a transition period, right? Where each idea is represented by a system. Mm. think we will, in the next few years, evolve into a single platform for each law firm where you launch, right? I mean, I'm a great believer. I heard some people poo-poo the idea of RAG, retrieval augmented generation, or I think we're evolving into RAS, retrieval augmented services. But you need to start with your knowledge, right? It has to be, you need to have at the core a very good search engine that surfaces everything that you do, right?
Yeah.
Once you have that, you could do things. And I think that from there, you're going to launch a lot of services. And it can be services from LexisNexis or Thomson Reuters or Harvey or Legora, but it will come into a single place where you launch, where your knowledge is based. It will already pre-index. You don't need to upload things. You just point at them. You select them. Ideally, they'll point at you when the time comes. When the trigger, the event, and with the agentic AI and the imagination is getting really exciting about all the possibilities, right? Instead of you trying to monitor and see the signal will find you and say, hey, you need to do something. And I already kind of did it for you, and you just need to look at it and take the following actions. Yeah. And where the team of human and AI together is very exciting.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I think it's going to be really interesting. The whole agentic definitions and people saying, yeah, we're agentic. Well, you're not. You've just pre-programmed some stuff, which isn't agentic. But it is because you've called it agentic. You know, so it's really interesting. As you say, we're in this transition period. Everything is moving. I've never known a piece of technology to change so quickly with the number of vendors, the number of opportunities. How do you, in your consultancy role and in your previous roles, obviously you build up relationships with vendors and you build up relationships with people, you trust them and everything else. How does a new vendor that's bringing something new and interesting to the market, how do they stand out in and amongst the other hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vendors that are out there? And there is a second part to that question, but advice for the vendor side, what does that look like?
I mean, for me to take a risk with you, you need to gain my trust. You gain my trust by showing up at industry events. When you look at the Skills Summer seminars, some of them are established vendors you already know, and some of them are new that you might have not heard of. But it can catch the attention of some of the players who say, hey, there's something very interesting here. Let's pay attention here. So looking at showing up and telling your story and telling a good story, storytelling is probably one of the most important skill sets in current times. Because the technology is strong. We trust that it will do a lot of it. Clearly, you need to prove it, right? And safety and security and all those things are go without saying. But storytelling and being able to crystallize the value that you bring for me to pay attention to you is really important. The other thing in the trust algorithm that we calculate, should we introduce something to the firm, I think vendors need to understand our biggest scarcity is still our lawyer's time. And we cannot afford to introduce a product that is not going to be there in 2 years, right? I can only inflict that many times change on the lawyer. And it includes operating system upgrade and switching the DMS. And any one of those is a big change. And the singularity is near. I mean, change is coming so fast and so much, and people are overwhelmed. So we're really trying to only introduce those changes that make sense. And if we do introduce a product, we would like to make sure it will be there in 2 years and it will do roughly what it does today. It will get better and the algorithm is improving, but the reason for which you come to this system should still be answered by the system, even if in a better way. So having a clear story and a good strategy that sticks and makes sense, and I can see how you're going to do it in 2 or 3 and 5 years, is definitely going to help me take a gamble on you to include you as part of my limited change in introductions of new product I can do.
Yeah. No, and I think you talk about something that's really, really important, because, I mean, everyone's building tech. You can vibe code, you can build something in 10 minutes and it's just ready. But actually, you sort of sit there and fundamentally we're changing lawyers' workflows.
Right.
We're either making them smarter or quicker or better, or we're taking them from this application to that application, or we're creating a whole new layer of doing something different. And I think that technology is a commodity. Whether it's the best technology in the world, it doesn't matter. It's the change impact on a lawyer's life. It's the context switching. It's the this, the that. That's why probably 5-6 years ago, everyone was trying to build the platform of the future. And right. Ultimately, it's probably not going to happen. It doesn't make any sense unless we look at it.
I do think there will be one platform and you know, something like a big deep judge that indexes all your knowledge and open to agents to sit on top of it. And you could build your own and bring others. Makes a lot of sense. And it also makes it much easier for law firms to try new modules, right? I mean, the agentic AI can click in, and I don't need even to know as a lawyer who wrote the code that does answer my problem. We used to think that chat UX is a lazy UX. It's because you didn't take the time to understand my workflows and to create a button that will do what I need, or to create the workflow to kick on at the moment I needed to. There is something about the simplicity of talking to the machine in plain English that is, I think, doing it right it's an art on itself. But I think a lot of it will just be integrated. And the more you understand my workflows and the more you solve my problems, you have a bigger chance to either become that platform or to play into that platform.
Yeah, completely agree. That makes sense.
Just one on the survey itself. So after we did the survey of who is using what, which you could find on skills.law, we said, hey, who do you recommend? Who do you like? We did a net promoter score. We ask you from 0 to 10, what's the likelihood you're going to recommend this vendor to a friend or colleague? And you could see on the site also the list of the most recommended legal tech vendors. And I think if I have to think about what is the commonality among the people at the top, it's mainly a lot of them are new players, new joiners in the last several years. So young companies that focus on one problem and they do very well at execution, delivering on the promise. And I think that's the common element about those.
Okay, cool. I mean, that's good insight. It's good insight. I think, you know, you start to look at the commonalities between the companies that, I mean, you mentioned Legal Tech Hub, you know, there's 2,500 or something like that companies on there now. I remember back in 2012, 2013, when I first met you, you know, you could probably count the number of legal tech firms on both of our hands. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, that's an understatement, but you know, was it 100, 150, maybe 200 sort of outliers? But, you know, there's thousands now, thousands.
It's fair to assume there will be consolidation in the market, right? I mean, a lot of those, we just finished a very long period of extraction in terms of the money flowing into legal tech. And if indeed the winter is coming and people are both going to buy less and invest less in legal tech, there will be a forced consolidation. Some companies will just shut down. Some will be bought and merged into others. So, and that's why when I said we have to be careful which companies we gamble on, that's part of the equation, right? I mean, you might just exist in 2 years.
And that was what I was going to talk about next, which is I've talked at length with prospects and clients and friends and my dog when she listens, but she doesn't listen very often. For you, talk about the buyer paralysis, because, you know, law firms historically have been slow movers into new technology. I can say this, our average sales cycle is anywhere from 8 to 12 months, typically when selling to a law firm. It's less selling to a corporate. But, you know, you start to look at people are getting new bits of technology and pushing the button on a decision within months, because they fear, particularly with the AI side of things, they fear what the competition's doing. They fear that they're getting left behind. They fear that their lawyers are going to look for other firms to go to because they're using the latest technology. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you might pull the trigger and make a buying decision. How do you see it? Certainly from the UK, I hear a bit of buyer paralysis for technology that isn't AI. So your older legacy technologies, your upgrades, your other bits and pieces, if it hasn't got AI on it, it's not even in the top five things that you should be doing right now.
Yeah,
Do you see that on the US side of things?
So the way I advise law firms is the only thing you need to know is what problems you're trying to solve, right? Be an expert on the challenges and prioritize them. And then use external sources, you know, between your subscription to Legal Tech Hub that can list everything, but then there are too many, and just get a consultant to help you with the selection process, right? I mean, that's you cannot boil the ocean. You cannot stay on top. I mean, there, in my mind, too many law firms have a person designated to keeping up with the market. It's Sisyphean work, and it brings very little value because you could just ask the Harbors of the world or the other consultancy, help me here with a selection. You've seen what others are using. It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be good and has to be solid decision. It has to meet my stack of technology. Make sure that I build something that is going to be here in the coming years and it makes sense. I think that's the way to go. So just know your questions. You don't need to know the answers, and you could get the answers from external help really quickly. And much more efficiently than trying to do it all yourself.
That makes sense. Random question that we didn't say that we would talk about, but it leads on from the AI side of things in a strategy sense. Do you see many firms building their own products and solutions as opposed to buying a platform like Harvey or Legora or Hebbia?
So definitely... there are more firms than I expected in the survey said that they are experimenting with their own solutions, either LLMs or creating client-facing tools. There's some exciting news. You know, we read about the Cleary buying their own AI house to build solutions. There are other firms like that. There are firms who build a big data analytics team that can do things. They can write modules. They can write a train or fine-tune LLMs. So that's definitely part of the equation. Different firms find themselves in different answers does it make sense to own the framework or just custom and build your own knowledge, fuel your knowledge into the team. So, you know, everyone can buy Centauri and extract information from your closing set into the world. You could then either keep it in Centauri or move it to Foundation or to Build Cloud. There are tools there that you don't need necessarily to build the building blocks to do that. As long as, again, if you know what your priorities are, how you get there, there are all kind of ways to do it. There are clearly advantages and disadvantages of owning your own team. For one thing, you own a startup company with one client, which is you, right? So it's expensive. Mm-hmm. It's a big investment. You're also dependent on a few individuals, right? If you lose a key employee, now you're stuck, and what do you do? And you're limited to the skill set that you were able to build, and there might be something else. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, if you use technology, you're dependent on the vendor's priorities and speed of developing things. So it's always a compromise, whatever side of it you fall. I do think the important thing is really to understand that you're not going to do really well in 5 years if you didn't start thinking about how you're going to sell your services in a world where some of the services that your client buy today from you, they will be able to buy from a box, an AI tool. And the prediction is anything that computers can do, computers will do. And anything that computers can do and do well, your clients are not going to buy from you. Because it's cheaper, faster, more convenient, more consistent than dealing with a lawyer. And I think it's really important to understand where is the value that you bring to the equation in the long run when things. And you know, Bill Gates' famous quotation: "People overestimate change in 2 years and underestimated change in 10 years." We are about 2 years into the ChatGPT becoming part of our lives. So the people say, we tried AI and it didn't change the industry. You know, it saved 7 minutes here and there. This is the efficiency gain that came in the very first round of the AI becoming part of our life. There is a radical change about to hit when agentic AI hits us and can actually do from beginning to end processes. So until today, we used in the action that you take. So first you find information, then you derive insights, then you make a decision, then you take action, then you learn. Right? Until now, we use technology to find information. Right? That was search engines, internal, external. That was pretty much the use of technology. In recent years, we also started to use technology to derive insights. Right? It can really find the commonality and give you, here is what you need to know. But that's where it ended until right now. With agentic AI, you move from automation to autonomy. Mm. And the software will find the information, derive the insights, make the decision, and take the action. And there is no lawyer in the loop. And it's a very appealing model for the things that it can do, and it can do well. It's just in the beginning. It's just in infancy, but it's coming. And if you're not prepared for that, and preparing doesn't mean you need to do it. You don't need to compete with a box for everything, but you might want to pull down from those services that a box can do. Either incorporate them, you know, either buy a box for yourself to do it, or build a box, or just walk away from it all. Your clients are going to talk into the box when they can.
Yeah, they're going to go to the one that just generates the least friction for their business outcomes. If they can trust it, they can build it and they can do it. I think it's interesting. You were talking earlier about know your problems, know your challenges of today's law firm. What you're also then advocating is actually imagine yourself in a law firm in 2030. What's changed? And how do you prepare for that now? Because I sort of agree with you. You've either got to be really small and focused as a firm, or you've got to be one of the big firms that can afford it and do it really, really well, I'm guessing, in terms of the resource to focus the time to think about what you need to do for 2030, if that makes sense. And I think that it's that there aren't many that are sat there thinking about the problems of 5 years' time and the opportunities in 5 years' time. They're thinking about the problems and challenges and opportunities of today. And I think that's going to be an interesting transition and process for firms go through. But as you say, we're 2 years into this cycle of change, transformation, evolution, innovation, whatever we call it. And I think that the reality is that, I mean, if you look at the performance of models today versus the performance of models that were out at Christmas time or the new start of a new year, they have dramatically improved. And, you know, it's not like it's been less than 5 months, and the advancements and the changes that are going through. It's going to be for law firms to place bets. It's going to be an interesting set of outcomes, I think.
I think the thing that most law firms lack, though, is the skills that you guys have, which is around mapping the processes and mapping the services to understand, is it a commodity, core, or cream kind of work? If it's cream, how do you defend it? And the cream is what you could charge the premiums on. Yeah. The commodity is the area that machines are most likely going to hit first. And then the core is their areas there. So you need to understand what you do and where you sit in the pyramid from your client's perspective. You definitely want to work with your clients on trying to do that mapping. What is boxable and how the clients would like to buy those services in the future. You want to be the one to invent the future with them. And I wrote about it on LinkedIn. There's a very active conversation on the topic now. I do think that law firms, the pyramid will change. There's going to be more technology that will do a lot of the things that today lawyers do. But for the things that you really bring a lot of value, you're going to charge much more per hour. And I think by the 2030 situation, we will hear about law firms that charge $10,000 an hour for the services that only they can do. And it's really essential, but they do it with 3 hours instead of 3 months. So the clients are still going to get faster, cheaper services. But law firms have a potential of making more money in that process.
Yeah, it is going to be really interesting how the commoditization of the combination of the expertise, experience, and the technology to deliver a client outcome that's quicker, faster, you know, for the right things, people are going to spend more money on doing it because they're going to want, they're going to, as you say, instead of taking a month, it's going to take a day, and you can start to leverage that and get paid well for it. I question how much work of that kind of nature there's going to be. It's going to be a really interesting sort of dynamic. If say a typical matter of XYZ flavor takes a month, and you can do it in 2 days, and you're going to charge the same amount of money, which means that you can do more of the same type of work. Right. But actually, is there that much work that's going to be out there?
And that's why it's important for you to start experimenting in safe environment like the Lega environment, where you could build your own workflows and see how it works, and see, you want to learn how to swim, you want to get in the water, staying on mainland, where we know a flood is coming. You want to get familiar with water, and you want to engage with people who are trying to understand your workflows, like what you do, like what Cynthia is doing, trying to figure out a specific use case and build a very tailored things for you. You want to engage with the big guys and have a conversation, and you want to engage with your clients to understand what they think they need in 5 years.
Yeah. It already is really interesting to see how this is playing out with the new entrants, the incumbents being disrupted slightly, how people are having to refactor old platforms to accommodate the leverage of AI. You know, it is so interesting. And I think, you know, you sit there, if you were a sort of a market analyst, just sat there watching it and just watching it flow through, it's like, and you had no skin in the game, there was nothing there. It's like, it's probably the best time to be in and around legal tech and innovation and knowledge. And you look at it, the potential is really massive, really massive.
Totally. And that's why I think we invite law firms to come together to do the journey and learning how to do it. Harbor just opened the AI Mastermind, which is a cohort of law firms coming together. I'm going to be part of the faculty to help them in this course. And the idea is, throughout a full year, we're going to talk about the problems and the solutions, and we experiment things. There's a fantastic faculty. If you check out the Harbor AI Mastermind website, and that's the way to figure it out together. It's still, I think, the exciting thing. We're all learning, right? We're all inventing the future together. And it's a very exciting future.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Sort of, it is. Nothing's been written. Nothing's set in stone. Back in 2002, 2005, 2006, you were talking about, we needed to have good search, and we worked with Recommind, and we did this. And it's like that's a standard. What people are building next, people haven't really thought about. You know, it isn't just a rehash of an old thing. It's like there are genuine strides forward. I mean, whether it's innovation or an evolution of where we are and what's going on, but you look at it, and I think there's it is exciting. Oz, I always end these little sessions on finding out where I might see the person I'm interviewing in human form next, as opposed to this video kind of world. Are you at any events anytime soon? Are you over here in Europe anytime soon? Or is it going to be August and ILTA for me seeing you?
So definitely August and ILTA for you. So every Friday now at 11 a.m. New York time, afternoon for you guys, we're going to do a webinar, the skills seminar series from now on. So that's still not in person. I'm going to be in the Inside Practice events in the few of them coming up. There is a few other conferences, and I'm definitely going to give you a buzz when I'm in London. We're going to do the Skills Summer in person.
Perfect.
Thank you, Ben.
No, Oz, thank you very much for your time, mate. It's greatly appreciated. I always enjoy our catch-ups, and even when winter's coming and you're sort of scaring the bejesus out of me, and everything's sort of going to be bad, I always come back to this idea that, you know, you say these things to sort of get people to think about what, not is happening today or tomorrow, but what might be happening in 3 or 5 years' time, and thinking about, okay, well, how can you be prepared? What can that be? And that just, it's a reference to the openness and sharing nature of the community that we are lucky enough to be in, and that you contribute to so much. So thank you very much.
Winter is a great time for change, right? So during the summer, when everyone is busy printing money, they only have that little attention to say, hey, why would we change? But once the people feel threatened and they're really, the business model is really a threat and they're struggling, they pay attention of better ways of working. And two, they can't really afford to go any other place, right? It's winter, nobody else is hiring. So they're kind of got to capture audience. And it's really time to make strategic decisions and they have the capacity, they have the time, they have less work on their plate, so they can engage with you. So winter is a great time for innovation. Don't let the situation just because
it's a good way to think about it. Oh, thank you very much for your time. I'll catch you very soon. Keep well, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.